ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Deb Josephs, Chief People Officer at IAC Applications. At IAC, Deb develops strategies for attracting, retaining, and growing top talent across all divisions and leads initiatives that enrich employee development and enhance overall organizational effectiveness. She also creates a culture of ongoing career success and advancement throughout the organization. Hi, Deb. It's great to speak with you.
And you.
Can you tell me about IAC Applications, what the company does, and how many employees you have?
Absolutely. We're one of the businesses within the IAC family, and we build consumer applications, desktop applications that are more like tool tabs on your browser windows, as well as mobile applications that you find in the App Store, mostly utilities, not necessarily gaming apps. And we have about just under 500 employees globally.
So that was my next question. Are they all located in the US? But if they're global, I guess, how many satellite offices do you have and where are you headquartered?
Yeah, we're headquartered in New York City and in Yonkers. And we have about half of our population here in the US. There are quite a few remote employees as well in the US who work from home. We also have the other half of our employees are spread out in Dublin, Ireland, in Graz, Austria, and in Minsk, Belarus.
My goodness. Interesting combination of places. So you're the chief people officer at IAC Applications. And what does that mean? And how is that different from when somebody talks about the head of HR? So can you explain how the chief people officer really is a kind of a different thing?
That's a great question. And I started my career in something called, well, this will just date me for sure, personnel, right?
And yes.
Okay, yeah. So I'm glad you're laughing.
It was an org change consultant. I know that the change that has gone on, but for listeners, help educate the group.
Yes. So, you know, you think of HR back then or personnel, and we're making sure you get paid and you get your benefits, and we're hiring you, and occasionally we're firing you, and we're administrative for the most part. And I sort of learned what not to do and moved as we progressed into human resources, recognizing that human capital was mightily important, and there were more things to think about, like retaining employees and what makes them happy and learning programs and things like that. And we evolved a little bit. However, I think as an HR professional, you know, I still call myself HR when I'm asked, but as an HR professional, we want to be really thought of as more than that. More of the way I phrase it is if your chief financial officer, your CFO, who, you know, is fully responsible for the money of your organization, if that person is the right hand to the CEO, then your chief people officer, your left, should be the left hand. If a CEO values the money as much as they value the people, those two should be your peers in your organization. And so I think the difference is trying to elevate it to the point where people recognize that the function is a representation of how important the people are to the company.
Right. So you're really fully part of the C-suite. This is you're right up there, and they listen yep. and involve you in these strategic conversations. There's a lot of talk around corporate culture, and it gets tossed around quite a bit. How would you define what corporate culture is?
So I've struggled with this. I think I get asked this question by every candidate that comes in, right? How would you describe the culture here? And I think people want to hear that, particularly as we are a tech company, we have the ping pong table and we have the snacks and you've got flexibility and your work hours and things like that. But I don't think that's culture. I think those are tactics that keep us competitive. I think culture is the collective personality, and I like to describe the culture as if I'm describing a really dear friend. you know, it's this collection of attributes that make up our persona. And, you know, whether it's we're people who are really transparent and honest with each other and direct with each other, we're people who are very collaborative. Those are words you could also use to describe your buddy, your neighbor, your friend, the guy that you say, hey, can you give me a lift to the airport, right? That's how I describe culture.
Mm. Is it possible to be intentional with the culture? I mean, is it an inadvertent byproduct of leadership behavior and recruiting? Or is it something, I guess my question is, if you decide or want to shift a culture, but you already have, you know, 500 employees and the leaders are who they are, can you intentionally shift it? And if so, how do you do that?
I think there are two parts to my answer. So the first part would be, the answer overarching would be, yes, you can be intentional, but there's an organic component. Your intent would come from your leadership. And the way your leadership envisions the culture they want to be a part of and they want to build. And through that, you make hiring decisions that are intentional, that bring people in with the same values that you have. The way I describe it is that your CEO is like mom or dad, mm-hmm. right? It's the parent. How they show up every day is how the rest of the family is going to behave. And you're a family as an organization. So you want shared values. And when I first joined this organization, we had a very different executive team that didn't share all the same values necessarily. Mm. And we made a conscientious effort to change the executive team, partially for some leadership skills, partially for some business skills that we wanted to infuse and grow our company with. And we needed to bring them into the organization. But it was intentional in that it was a search for certain leadership qualities that aligned with our desired and already existing values. So that was one intentional act to evolve our culture. And the other was a ground up effort, which was created through focus groups and surveys and really understanding how the existing employees, I mean, there was something great about the culture already when I got here that we wanted to capture, but people didn't have the words to describe it eloquently when they were out there talking about what they do and where they work. So we did a survey, focus groups, gathered a lot of intel, interviewed people, new hires and people who'd been here for a while, and came up with a common language. And then we infused some words that were somewhat aspirational as well. So some of them were descriptive and some were aspirational. And those became our values. And we publicly marketed them inside and outside our organization and rewarded people who demonstrated them so that we reinforced the behaviors. And those became, along with defining mission statement, those things became really foundational for our culture. We created a video around it that's pretty unique. I'd love to, if you go on YouTube, a shameless plug for the organization, if you go on YouTube and plug in IAC applications, there's like the first thing that pops up is a video, not your typical culture video, something like that.
Yes. And you, it's all about, it was a really fun video. And I have to say that
I'm glad you saw it.
Yeah, it was really fun. And obviously people were having fun participating in the making of the video, and impressively diverse for not your typical tech looking company, you know, what you think of.
Very intentional. Yeah.
Yeah. Very intentional. And I'm sure it leads to better product and better outcome. What are some of the things you do to help build community, drive innovation, and spark efficiency? I mean, you've got ping pong tables. Is that really, does that help? Or is that, I mean, what, how do you drive that in a team?
I mean, having the environment, by the way, if you can't hear the ping pong balls, they seriously are behind the wall where I'm sitting. Like, they're literally playing every day around this time. Like, they do take their ping pong very seriously, but that, you know, it's not all day. It's just sort of an afternoon reprieve, and it's a stress reliever for a small group of developers, and they really enjoy hanging out like that. But we try to create an interactive environment and have happy hours and things like that, but I don't think that's what does it. I think what sparks innovation and diverse thought, right? Because we have made incredible strides to create what we refer to as a holistic mindset here, where you want to bring to the table as many diverse and include or be inclusive of as many diverse thoughts as possible in order to create the best possible outcomes for our consumers. So to do that, we set goals, key performance indicators, and we monitor them, and we give or empower our employees to accomplish those KPIs rather than micromanage them. They're accountable for their behaviors. They're accountable for their outputs. They're not accountable for showing up at 9 o'clock in the morning. That's not typical for a developer. They're accountable for getting their work done. We have unlimited time off. We treat people like adults. Mm-hmm. We really follow three key ideals when it comes to motivating people and hopefully motivating them to be innovative. And that's is what they're doing playful to them. Are they enjoying it? That's really first and foremost, right? We make sure we put them in roles where they can strive and thrive. Second, we want to make sure they understand their purpose, right? Do they know how their KPIs fit in with those of the whole business that they support, of the whole company overall, et cetera, and how they will be measured? So what's their purpose? And the third is their potential. Do they understand how they can learn and grow and what it takes to learn and grow? And that learning and growing also means helping the company learn and grow. So the play, purpose, and potential, what we call, you know, as we refer to it as total motivation, TOMO, helps us create that innovation and with through their own motivations. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. That's great. You've worked for businesses that are a variety of sizes. I looked at your South by Southwest video, and the range is quite extreme, where you were a department of one to this very large international company. How do you maintain intimacy in an organization as you grow? Because there is something about intimacy which makes it easier or more likely that people are going to feel playful, that it's less giant and corporate. So how do you maintain that sense of intimacy?
Can you more elaborately define intimacy and what you're envisioning with that? What do you mean?
Well, I guess there's something about team size that where you're efficient because you know the players on the team. And I guess it's how do you scale where you're still having that real tight connection?
The relationships. Yeah.
Right. So how do you scale relationship, I guess, is the question. And this is of particular interest in the media landscape, because what we have going on right now are a lot of mergers and a lot of combinations where it's not even organic growth, but it's, it's additive growth, you know, where you're glomming things together. And so as a person who is, you know, creating culture, bringing things together, creating things to drive innovation, how do you scale those things? Because I think a lot of them tend to work. There's a size point where it's sort of optimal size, but as you grow, how do you keep that?
So, I worked in company, you know, the smallest company I worked in was 100 people, but I would say it's no different. We had an operation in Tel Aviv. Half the folks were there and half were in the U.S. and New York. And here, you know, we're sort of half and half international. We're acquiring companies. I think that to some extent, you really can't maintain one culture, but you can infuse the same values and scale, ensuring that people you bring into the fold or companies you acquire share your values. I think I've read somewhere one of the main reasons that acquisitions fail is because of an inability to merge the two disparate cultures, company cultures. And so when we do an acquisition, I spend time interviewing the executive teams of the acquired company pre-acquisition to make sure that we're going to align on values. We're all going to be, you know, we all find relationship orientation as important with each other. Like, it's a very important component. We have a high need for trust in our organization. So that means traveling to Minsk. I've been in Minsk a couple of times. I've been in Graz we're employees, and we spend time on video. We use Slack as a constant communication medium, and it really boils down to the open communication, the constant lines, the constant, I spend my time going, hey, did you talk to that person? I mean, that's a lot of my role, right? Did you guys connect on this? Because this person in my left ear told me this yesterday, and now you're telling me something different in my right ear. You two need to talk. And there's a lot of need to communicate effectively here in order for us to be successful. It's just part of our particular persona or culture. And we're very, very, I've seen conversely here where there's someone who's not forthcoming and doesn't really communicate well and therefore can be perceived as untrustworthy, not survive, not make it in our company for that reason. It's kind of remarkable. So that's what makes us work. And I think that's what makes us able to scale. And it's not always easy. There's the time zone barriers, there's language barriers. But as I mentioned up front, our business has really two different components, a desktop and a mobile side. And sometimes the two don't overlap necessarily. So as long as we're growing with the same values on either side, I think those are scalable.
Right.
Because they all have common missions and common work goals.
Right, right. The buzzword these days is data. What type of metrics do you track and what kind of analytics skills do you want on your HR team to help really watch these things?
Yeah, I mean, data sort of is critical for our business as well, you know, sort of consumer data and that sort of stuff. So we are a data-driven organization. We have a pretty strong analytics group, some pretty good tools in the organization. For HR, you know, I just had this conversation yesterday with a group of peers in the HR sphere, and we were talking about, you know, what are some of the things you measure? And a bunch of us, including myself, have thrown out some traditional metrics like time to fill a job and cost of hiring. And in some cases, I'm not looking at total turnover because there's what you can control and there's what you can't control. And we define it more like desirable and undesirable turnover. So we use data differently. We use data to see how we can improve processes. For example, in the hiring cycle, how many days did a resume sort of sit on a manager's desk instead of what was the entire time to fill? But the data that we measure quarterly, and we actually hold our executives accountable for this data, as we do measure turnover, but we measure engagement, and we survey engagement every 6 months. Engagement is comes in a form of a survey where we ask about employees' learning opportunities. We ask about their feeling of inclusion. We focus a little less on the diversity numbers because that's very difficult, and we focus on learning opportunities. And we focus heavily on recognition. Employees here 3 years ago scored us super low on recognition, and we put in place a recognition program in response to that, and now we measure recognition. So our survey data, what employees tell us, and the feedback they give us through that is our data. I mean, that's really invaluable information for us.
Right. So in your role, you've been tasked with leading transformation, corporate transformation. And certainly, you know, it sounds like when you had some leadership changes, you were very involved in this fundamental transformation. How do you sustain energy during a transformation like that? Because that kind of change is draining, it distracts people, and you've got the change happening, plus you have all the work that has to happen. So how do you sustain your own energy? And how do you help the people in your team and in your large organization sustain their energy?
So starting outside in, the key in the larger organization, because we've now gone through some significant organizational changes almost every 6 months since I've been here, and managed to maintain and retain employees and maintain our engagement, if not increase engagement. And our secret sauce is no secret. It's communication. We hold town halls. We hold the executives accountable for going out and communicating, being really open and honest in Slack channels. We just had a town hall this morning talking about there's like an elephant in the room. Are there going to be layoffs? Because we had some you know, changes to our business model. And we sat there in a room full of 50 people and talked about it. So we really insistent on over communication. And I've now gone through so many organizational changes in my career that I've seen no other way to approach it other than to over communicate. Even if you don't know something, it's better to say, I actually don't know, than say nothing at all, because people just will make it up, right? They'll rumor.
Right.
And so for my own team, maintaining the energy, we're all really close. We interact with one another more frequently than most teams, whether it's Slack or phone or in person. We're together once a week for sure. And I have one-on-ones and I really check in with folks. But we're interdependent because each of us, whether it's Netta, who handles diversity and inclusion, or Sarah, who handles learning development, or the recruiting team, or just basic employee relations, we're all different touch points for our employees, and we all have different ears to the ground. My ear to the ground is with the executive team, and the HR coordinator's ear to the ground might be with, you know, incoming candidates, and you get intel. So we all bring it together and help each other problem solve with a very holistic approach to things. And so I think the connections that we have and the relationships we have with each other keep us energized. And you kind of, when you're an HR team and you know stuff that nobody else knows, you really have to depend on each other and trust each other, because you can't go outside the circle.
Right. No, you can't.
Yeah.
So I've also read that one thing you love to do is develop great bosses. And I think that a common misconception is often that bosses are qualified to deal with people just because they've become that level of manager. So can you tell me a little bit about how you go about developing a good manager, a good boss?
Yeah. And that doesn't necessarily mean my own boss, by the way.
No. Absolutely. It really is, you know, what can people do? And if you're a manager who doesn't happen to sit in your company, what can they work on in themselves to help make them better at managing people? What do you do?
No, that's great. So this stems from my belief that people just actually don't leave a company. They leave their boss. And the boss represents the company for sure. But when you look up reasons for turnover, certainly studies have shown number one is their manager, and somewhere number seven is money or something like that. I mean, it's not very high on the list, but it's a factor.
Mm.
And to develop great bosses, we provide, first of all, we have a 4-month learning program designed specifically for mid-level managers, either their first time managing or they've been managing for a period of time. And so we invest in focused training. It's 1 day a month for 4 months, and they have a 360 review. If they get feedback 360, they get one-on-one coaching. We invest, and it's really important that we do that here. And then there are subsequent follow-up workshops and things. But our philosophy around learning really is experience. And so we've become a people ops department that does a lot of one-to-one coaching, and we spend a lot of time with our new managers and with our newly hired managers and leaders, helping them understand the dynamics in their groups. We do a new manager assimilation program, which level sets expectations between the manager and their new group of employees that reports to them. We facilitate a mentorship program here for people who are interested in becoming managers. They can start out as a mentor. You know, we buddy people up when they're hired. So we really try to focus on the experience of helping others develop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a manager's purpose, is giving the feedback that's constructive. We do workshops on giving feedback. We have a pretty intense end of year review process that we don't just allow someone to say, oh, they're doing a great job. We really do ask for people to give the gift of feedback, and managers are accountable for this. And so it's part of their own KPIs. Mm-hmm. If someone's a manager, they are evaluated on how good of a manager they are through survey feedback, for one. So they, you know, we really can get good data. There's no magic training program. I think the secret is, and it's not a secret, is not promoting somebody just because they're good at what they do. And that's such a common mistake. I mean, if you think about the promoting your best salesperson to a managerial role because they're your best salesperson, you're actually going to lose sales. You're going to hurt yourself, you know, unless they're a superstar leader as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a really different skill set. So evaluating those you bring into managerial roles for the values and the leadership qualities that you need as to be a manager is the first step. It's not letting people just step into a position just because they have the core technical skills. Mm-hmm. They need to have the leadership skills as well. So our interview process includes technical interviews and leadership interviews.
Interesting.
And you're evaluated as a leader. And so in order to develop those people, you have to reinforce their good behaviors, give them great feedback, recognize and reward that behavior, and set them up as a role model in the organization and set the bar high.
Right. How do you interview for leadership? What would be an example of a revealing question that people who are interviewing and considering candidates, whether or not to promote them into a leadership managerial role, what would be a telling question they could ask?
So we ascribe to a behavioral interviewing methodology, which is like storytelling, right? So we believe past behavior is a predictor of future behavior. So if we're interviewing a candidate, we have about 6 or 7 specific leadership skills that we look for across the organization. And most of them actually do align with our values. So a question might be, tell me about a time when you had to deliver unpleasant news to one of your employees, how you handled it and what was the outcome.
Right.
We want a specific story of, you know, maybe where did you fail? What did you learn from it? Because these are types of leadership traits that are revealing for us.
Right. Right. I think that's great. So we've actually run through our time, believe it or not. And I know it's crazy. It goes so fast. You've been such a wealth of information. Before we sign off, one last question. If you were to leave people with one single takeaway, people who aren't in the people role that you are in, what should be that takeaway that they can bring to their everyday work life? What is that takeaway they should bring?
Oh, I know what I want to say, and it's so silly.
Say it! Say it! Be silly!
HR is not the police.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, you know, we're here to help. I mean, it's good.
We want to grow the organization. We have the same goals as the rest of the company, and it's sort of a new HR person that's going to really help you drive the business. And I wish CEOs would really recognize the value that very few do.
Right, right. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I've enjoyed our conversation tremendously.
Me too. Thank you very much as well.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.